Members, I apologize. I was waiting for one more member to officially bring it to order. We're one short. As soon as somebody steps in, we'll actually officially convene. But first, we have the Science Museum. If they could come forward, that would be great. Great. Welcome, gentlemen. If you could identify yourself for the record, and you could go through your budget proposal for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and guests. I'm Dr. Eric Jolly, president of the Science Museum of Minnesota. I'm joined by John Severson, our director of corporate and government relations at the Science Museum of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your time and the time of all of our members today. For the last decade, we have taken the first 60 seconds or so of our testimony to indulge in a science moment, and since you have a bug in front of you, I hope you'll give me the same moment now to explain why I would do that.
Please, go ahead.
And so, as a young man, I collected baseball cards and traded them, and my kids now collect...
Excuse me, Dr. Jolly.
Yes, sir.
Members, I'd like to officially bring the Environment, Natural Resource Policy, and Finance Committee to order. I have the minutes of February 12th. Representative Heinzman, would you like to move those minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the minutes.
Discussion to those minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Minutes are adopted. Continue, Doctor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so as I collected baseball cards and traded them, and our kids collect Pokemon cards and traded them 150 to 200 years ago in America and in Europe, one of the most avid things to be collected were beetles. They were pinned by often young men on the backs of cards and traded, exchanged by one another. And one of the most famous collectors of beetles was a man named Charles Darwin. And as a young man, he would go out and try and expand his card collection. One day, as he wrote in his autobiography, he was out and he cut back the bark of a tree and he saw an incredible beetle. He grabbed it. It was a bombardier beetle. He was happy to add it to his collection. And then he saw another beetle going on, and he grabbed it. It was better still. And as luck would have it, this young man with a beetle in each hand saw the most prized collection of his collection come out, a third beetle that he did not have. Troubled and not wanting to give up either of these, he popped the bombardier beetle into his mouth, and he reached for the other beetle, and something happened. See, the bombardier beetle creates hydrogen peroxide in a small cavity of its body, and it's able to heat it to 212 degrees Fahrenheit before it sprays it down the throat of our young Charles Darwin. He screams and lost all three beetles. Well, he wrote about this memorable story. And last year, a researcher at the University in Leeds read Charles Darwin's autobiography, and just 3 months ago announced that based on the design of the bombardier beetle, this researcher was able to create the smallest and most efficient fuel injection system the world has ever seen. In the field of science, we call it biomimicry. In the United States last year, researchers were looking at something called the Namib beetle from the Namib desert, and they discovered on its back a microcrystalline structure that we would call a nanotechnology system. And by design, it causes water to accumulate on the back of that beetle from water vapor in the air, and it actually shunts it to a small collection port in the back of this beetle. From that, our military has created a bottle that they can put outside the tents at night in the desert, and it will self-fill with water. It's kind of cool. And so we wanted to share, as we do have just this year created 100 nanotechnology exhibits for museums around the United States to help support our science museum here in Minnesota, the story of nanotechnology, biomimicry, and to give you each a good piece of one of our many beetles. If you have the beautiful Deidre Malaysia beetle, under bright light, it shines copper. If you've got the beautiful green beetle, Clopethia, then you will see that you have, each of you, a beetle which is being used today as the model for design of landmine removal systems. So enjoy your science moment. With that, I would like to briefly return to our general fund request. You have before you a request for $1.079 million. It is unchanged from last year. Still less than the museum received in 1992. but an amount that we are very satisfied with and we appreciate. Last year, support from the legislature went to do great work, and we hope to do the same this year. And while we want to thank you for our past support, we want to let you know that current support is truly essential. It is 3% of the Science Museum's budget, and while it may be a small amount of dollars, it is a big impact to the Science Museum of Minnesota. With the legislative funding, we're able to do things that I can't do with other funding sources. It is far less difficult to find someone who will have their name put on this cell lab sponsored by, name a great Minnesota company, or this exhibit on light and technology sponsored by, name another great Minnesota company. But many of our great Minnesota companies aren't really eager to have a sign that says, we just washed your floors and cleaned your toilets. And so the foundation that makes our facility stellar, respectful for our teachers, our visitors, and students, and provides the foundation for all of the other support that we get. The money which allows us to do the things that no one wants to put their name on and to take care of urgent needs as they arise is this critical pot of money. This is how we protect the asset of the Science Museum of Minnesota, and it is essential. It helps us advance our mission to inspire learning, inform policy, and improve lives. We believe that science is an essential literacy, and it is a literacy which needs to be broadly and equitably disseminated. And through the support of our state and our many partners, we believe that we help do that, that we expand our future workforce, that we inspire students, that we close not only the achievement gap but the aspiration gap. Last month alone, on one single weekend, we had 8,000 young women come for Women in Science. We will serve in our school outreach programs and in visits from schools 20% of all Minnesota K-12 students. 20%. We are in every county in the state with our outreach programs. We're partnered with dozens of libraries to help others do good work as well. Through the activities that we're able to support with the base that you let us build, we've become one of the nation's largest exhibit construction companies, giving Minnesotans the first look at the best exhibits being created in the nation before they're traveled around the world, and using the resources that we develop from those traveling programs to support things like our Great Tickets program, where we subsidize for low-income visitors 55,000 low-income ticket admissions last year alone, the biggest ever, where we subsidized for hundreds of school children and their teachers bus transportation, increasing the rate of support for more distant schools, where we subsidize programs for youth at risk, teacher professional development, teacher training, and resource materials. We believe that nonprofit is a tax status and not a business plan. We use the money that you give us to create a solid foundation to build the kind of opportunities that allow us to show the best of Minnesota with local proof of concept and national scale-up, and to support Minnesota's assets by distributing those best practices around the country. We're proud of what we do at the Science Museum of Minnesota. We believe we inspire learning. We know we change lives. And I would be happy to talk about what we do with your very important contribution to our budget, $1,079,000. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Dr. Jolly. Any questions for Dr. Jolly or Director Severson? Thank you, gentlemen, for coming in. We appreciate it, and we look forward to working with you, and thanks for the good things you do.
Thank you, Mr.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
MPCA, if you could come down and remind us where we're at on your presentation.
Really?
Dodgers game. Welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you again for joining us on the presentation of the budget. We are on page, on slide 32 of the presentation for environmental assistance and cross media. And you will hear us slip into the acronym ECHM from here and there. And that's what environmental assistance and cross media is. This is our area where we send out dollars to local units of governments and others that apply for our loan and assistance programs, but also where we have funding that covers multiple disciplines. For instance, mercury is an issue that solid waste, air, water all play a role in, and a lot of those items are funded in this area. An example here, just a couple notes of some of the assistance projects that the agency has worked on.
Commissioner Kadelka and CFO Mueller, I just want to remind you, we are going to get through. We've got an hour and a half. I think we have plenty of time for a lot of questions and to get through, but we will finish with you today. So just go ahead and continue. Welcome. Mr. Mueller, why don't you identify yourself for the record so we have it on the tape. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, good morning. My name is Lyle Mueller. I'm the CFO for the MPCA.
Thank you.
As Commissioner Kadelka mentioned, we're now on page 33 in the presentation, taking a look at our history of funding for this particular budget program. As you can see, the two main sources of funding are the Environmental Fund as well as federal funds. We have a significant grant that we received through EPA that comes into this particular budget program, and that's that is kind of a multifaceted grant that ends up coming into this particular budget program. The other increase in our general fund funding under this request reflects a number of the change items that we'll be talking about shortly. As you take a look at the various programs that are funded through this budget program, you'll see that the largest agency program that's funded here is the Solid Waste Management. And one of the elements of that particular program are the SCORE grants. As a reminder, those are now at $17,250,000 in fiscal 16 and 17, so almost $35 million of the 56 run through that particular program.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the first change item we have up is improving our environmental data services. Some of you have heard us talk before that the agency's databases that we have are nearly two decades old. There's a number of them, and we are in the tail end of a transformation. And the transformation is not only moving to a new system, which will be called Tempo, but also during this process, we've been using continuous improvement tools to standardize the business processes behind it, permitting, application, so that the good things that may be happening in one program are brought across the agency into other areas also. As many of you know, consumers and citizens are asking for more things to be available online and having access to it freely. And while we have right now about 10 or so different applications available with online tools, when we phase in the new release of our database system, Tempo, we'll double that number. However, that's much there's much more to be done. If we were to provide that same equal access to folks, there are at least 100 or so different types of applications that could be designed and used by folks. And that's what the heart of this is about. We could ask IT to simply design systems, and they would design systems that would be work. However, the question is, do they often meet the needs of those who are using it, whether it's permittees or citizens looking to get information? And that's what this request is behind, is making sure we have folks, and this is for four FTEs, to work on to make sure we understand what folks need and design things in a way that's actually used and improve from what is about 20 or so online systems to accelerate that to a much higher number.
Thank you. We have a couple of questions. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kudelka, the money that you're asking for here, is that going to be added to your base? Or is this, I mean, it seems like a lot of money.
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, it is to the base for continuing improvements on the system.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, what is the continuous improvement based on then? I mean, do we have some budgeting that you've actually done to figure out how you're going to spend it, or is it just again adding $900,000 to the base and it just goes on and on and on and we don't have outcomes?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we do have numbers and we can provide more details. Part of that is the staffing that needs to be done, and along with contracts to make those IT improvements either through Minute or the outside contractor that we have on this project. So there is a mix of that. We can provide some more details. This has been after looking at what our needs are and sizing them to what's available dollars in the environmental fund. That's how we've come up with this. This isn't just picking a number and deciding that's what's needed. On the change item sheet, we do have a number of different types of metrics that we can look at moving forward on some of the things that will have that outcomes that you're talking about, and those include looking at improving and better customer service in permitting or other ways where people access our data. So two examples include, one is permitting. Right now, someone sends in a large paper file. That information now has to be uploaded into various databases. There's increased chance of just, when you do the transcription, errors, an extra zero or not in it compared to when the first person put it in. Also then, when we're looking to do a complete application, if things are completely missing, that means sending it back to the proposer to get that information. By creating an online window into the database for someone to be able to input that directly, they'll be able to know whether or not they missed something. Did they miss the piece where they put in their modeling data? The system would be able to help with some of those quantity things, not necessarily the quality of the data coming in, but help work in improvements in that area. And a non-permitting example is with our cleanup programs. Right now, there are a lot of voluntary parties that work for cleanup programs, and part of the efforts that they need to do is do a record search on environmental contamination investigations in the area to complete what's called a phase one. That has requirements have become more and more over time through the federal government, which requires even more requests from data from the agency. That amount of requests and the amount of work that has done has slowed down that process. By working with additional folks to handle a better way to handle our data and move it faster will help these people move their projects forward faster. And those are the outcomes that we're looking to achieve with this change.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kudelka, it sounds like you've already started this project. Is that correct?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, correct, we have started the database. This additional dollars would be to make it at its full potential. When we do the phase one and phase two on implementing the actual changeover to the new database, we're going to double our online services, and what we'd like to do with this request is go much beyond that to make sure that those 20 or so that have that level of online service, we're expanding that to many more opportunities.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, what fund are you using within the agency to have started this project?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we've been using environmental fund dollars to help start the project.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, why can't you just continue to use that?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair, the project is to go above and beyond what we're doing already in this effort. There was a one-time cost where the agency has been able to, through continuous improvement and other appropriations, to be able to put together the dollars through appropriations from the legislature and the governor to start the project. Those were one-time funds that we were able to put together for that piece to continue it moving forward to go accelerate what this system can do and provide more than what we're looking to do with the system. There will need to be additional funds to have that happen.
Any additional follow-up, Representative?
Well, just one, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kadelka, you referred to the cleanup program. Can you specify for me which cleanup program you're talking about?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, there's a number of voluntary cleanup programs. VIC, our voluntary investigation and cleanup program, would be one of them, where parties come in and ask for liability assertions that they're not liable for things on the property that may be found later and others. These are often documents needed for financing. Those are the type of cleanup programs that ask for the additional data.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, at some point, Mr. Chair, at the end of the meeting last week, we kind of ran short of time, and I want to circle back sometime and talk more about the Superfund and cleanup and petroleum sites, if we could, please.
All right. To this point, Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kadelka, earlier you mentioned that this program is driven by needs. How do you determine those needs?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, one example is the workload that is coming in terms of the cleanup programs and the environmental investigation data that we're asking for those phase ones. We've seen a spike in that area, and so that's one. The other is we have a list of certain types of permits that will have online systems after the rollout. For instance, the feedlot applications and annual reports will be a system that later this summer will be unveiling so that folks can do this online. However, there are other types of water applications and permitting that doesn't have that same capability. So it's those other ones that we'd like to get online to provide the same and equal access for individuals. So those are our two areas of needs that I think hopefully that helps.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Commissioner Kadelka, so you're determining these needs with what you've just told me internally. Have you had any customer feedback that is driving these needs? It sounds like this is strictly internal that you've decided that you need to do these improvements in the program.
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we have met with a number of folks, including the chamber. We have a number of folks that are in the testing phase with us, including counties. For instance, on the feedlot issues, counties use our data, and one of the groups that we're looking to be able to provide additional access to is to have a shared data system. We have had conversations, and we'll continue to have those conversations, and that's part of what this request is about, is making sure we fully understand what is needed by folks. And will be used by individuals before we move forward with IT developing pieces. That business analysis staff, which we're hoping to add to do what you made sure and asked about.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kadelka. So how many FTEs, additional FTEs, are you going to require for this program?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee, the change request here is for 4 FTEs.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So approximately how many dollars is that going to be? The $900,000 is the total program. What about just direct salary expense and fringes?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the salaries and the other things such as compensation, IT, human resources, and the other things that go together with staff, we use a number, and I'm going to look to Lyle. I think that's 110 per FTE at this point.
So 440 of the 9 is the FTEs. Follow-up, Representative Uglum.
No, Mr. Chair, that's just fine.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kadelka, I'm curious about how the mechanics of this, you know, recent history with the state of Minnesota and IT rollouts has been rocky at best. I think of the driver's license situation and the insurer situation and others with security and just plain making these systems work. What are you at PCA doing to assure us that you can get the work done quickly, effectively, at any reasonable cost?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, that's a great question. It was a concern of us going in. First of all, the company that is building this software, it's off-the-shelf software that's being customized for Minnesota. There are a number of other states that have used it also. So we're not starting from scratch, which is an important part. In addition, we have are working with our new Minute CIO. It has also done a number of transformations in the private sector and the financial sector and has experienced doing this and has really helped lead us into make sure that we're are using his past experience to make sure we're not running into some of the same problems that have troubled others. One of the issues that really, as you've seen in the driver's license stories and the newspaper and others, is making sure that the program folks are driving and have an understanding that it's meeting the needs of the agency. And we've also been doing that by providing our program staff having a very big role in helping design this to make sure it meets our needs so we don't end up with a system at the end of the day that we don't use or others don't use. And so those are some of the ways that we are trying to make sure that we've learned from past errors from other state agencies and private sectors to make sure that we're not making the same.
And Commissioner, what is the price of the CAN software before it's changed?
Mr. Chair and committee members, right now we have a contract with the company of about $6 million on this project.
Follow-up, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Kudelka. You know, my concern is that we have kind of dual tracking going on here. We have investing in FTEs and staff within the agency at the same time as we're utilizing the Minute state program. Are we sure that we're doing this in the most efficient manner possible, or are we just adding employees all over the place?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we've been working very closely with Minute as a lead on this project on the IT portion. We have looked at what other states have done to make sure that we have learned from their situations to make sure that we have the correct amount of resources. We believe we're doing a good job to make sure we have a successful project.
Commissioner Kudelka, could you get us a little more information on just the breakdown of over what bienniums is the $6 million? How's it been going? What a little more information would be good for us, and how does this fit into going forward, that whole thing? I think some background information on that would be good. Commissioner, let's go first. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kudelka, did I hear you correctly? You said that just now that you have a $6 million contract with this company at this time?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, that is correct. We have a contract now to build the base system.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when did you sign that contract?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we can get back to you on that. I don't have the date up with me right now.
That would be good. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, if I can go back to the slide, the environmental assistance cross media, the $56 million spent in the environmental fund, I think a big majority of that, is it like $35 million that's for SCORE grants? Then what's the other $21 million spent on? Are we going to see that later? If we are, we can just wait.
Mr. Chair, some of the other details that are in that $56 million, in addition to the SCORE grants that we talked about, and you're correct, that's about $35 million of the 56. In addition, that includes what we are spending. You know, clearly the category's name is solid waste integrated solid waste management. That includes spending through one of our divisions for environmental assistance operations. We have a couple of grant programs that operate through that particular segment. Certainly we can provide more information. We can get down to whatever level of detail you would desire on that.
Well, Mr. Mueller, what I would like to see is a connection to the solid waste. So if you could give us a breakdown of what the money's actually being spent on. And then Mr. Kadelka, do you have someone in the audience, or do you want to speak to the SCORE grants and how they've worked over the years and what that actually, what are they? $35 million is a significant amount of money. The history of that, how long we've been doing it, how much the successes of the program, that would be terrific.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm going to just do the recent history. Last biennium there, or last legislative session, there was an increase from what was $14.25 million in terms of the funding, and it was increased to 18.25 in this from this fiscal year, and then the next 2 years built into the base, it goes up $3 million each year, so it's at 17.25. But I have with me my colleague here that has more history on the overall program that can provide details on that.
Welcome, Mr. Benke. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Dave Benke, Director of the Resource Management Assistance Division at the PCA. The SCORE grants have been around since the early 90s and have gone directly to counties to help fund their recycling efforts. And they're divided up amongst all 87 counties and the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District to provide the programming to get the recyclables not only collected, but then managed, marketed, and into new products.
And Mr. Benke, does that all just go to counties? It doesn't go to anybody else, so it goes to the 87 counties. Is it based on population? Is there any geography involved?
Mr. Chair, the formula set up for that does use both population. So it first provides a base to every county, and every county receives a base amount, and then by population, it's added on to. That money is used by the counties directly for some of their programming, and a lot of it's passed through to cities to help provide the opportunities at the local city level.
Okay, and does any go to any state agencies to encourage state agencies to do the right thing, or to private companies? Mr. Benke.
Mr. Chair, this money is set up for the counties, and the counties are obligated to do the planning with that money. This does not go necessarily to private entities or to state agencies, but the mixture of the solid waste system in the state is a mixture of public and private, and so there is connection there. And so on the local level, counties might partner up with the hauler to get the service done, and so the money might get there that way. But it's not a direct appropriation to haulers or to state agencies.
And again, what year did this begin, and how big was it when it began?
Mr. Chair, members, the initial amount that was set up for the SCORE was a little over the current rate. It was about $15.7 million, I believe. We can get the exact number back. And then it was adjusted back based on a formula to about $14 million. It has stayed that level with a little bit of a reduction in about the early 2000s and then the most recent additions that you've seen in the last 2 years. So it's been pretty flat over the time. And if you look at the SCORE money that the state provides, the local counties provide an additional $60 million currently to add to that to get the recycling done in the state.
So we're spending $100 million, and it started in the 90s, and the two major cities in our state instituted single source in the last 12 months. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair.
Or maybe a little longer than 12 months.
Mr. Chair, the two questions that you have there, how much money we've spent over the years, I think if we compare that to what we've spent on disposal of those materials, I think makes a good contrast. We spend more throwing things away than we do recycling, and we miss the opportunities. About 20,000 direct jobs are associated with that. There's revenue associated with the materials that come out, and facilities across the state like Liberty Paper up in Becker, Store Enso up in Duluth, Envirosys up in Moorhead, several plastics folks around the state all convert that into product, and so the use of that is much better than throwing it into a landfill or disposing it through energy recovery. So that contrasts what we've spent versus what we spend on throwing it away. Not to forget about the closed landfill program where we spend on cleaning up all those landfills that we now own based on that same practice. And I think the last question that you had was the source-separated collection of recyclables. That's a new system that the haulers have implemented to get the most recyclables out of the residential curbside pickup. Now, it doesn't come without some issues associated. Once you put all the recyclables in one container, you got to take it back apart. But it is a more efficient process to get it collected. It requires additional equipment to separate it, but more materials are coming in through that than were. And the last two cities to do that, St. Paul and Minneapolis, are rolling that out and have, I think, shown that, you know, you've got to get as much out of the waste stream as you can from the residents, but also we need to have business recycling too.
Well, Mr. Benke, I look forward to the discussion, but we've been dumping $100 million a year into it, and the reality is when I was a kid, we recycled papers and sent them to Horner Waldorf, and maybe we're sending them to Horner then, or Waldorf Paper Company, whatever it was called, and maybe we're sending it to a different outfit today in Becker. But our rates are embarrassing. They're embarrassing from this building all the way across the state. This isn't rocket science, and to be dumping $100 million and to be getting what we're getting is embarrassing. I can't see it any other way, and I think we should be rethinking how we're doing this and do a much better job of partnering in a better way. And again, you don't need to look any farther than this building. Finally, in this room, we now have three different garbage cans that look completely different than anywhere else, and we can't get uniformity, and we're dumping $100 million into it. That's $20 for every, or $17 for every Minnesota. I appreciate what you're trying to do, but we could do a lot better, and I think it could be a lot more simplistic. So I don't know if you have a comment on that, but this is we are not going to continue on this path the way we are. To try and defend, I'm sorry, and I don't know how many years we've had single sort in Hastings, 5, 6 years, maybe 7 or 8. I mean, that's not rocket science. It's not. And the gas stations, they don't have any recycling. We don't communicate with each other. We're supposed to be teaching kids in school what to do, and then when they go out in the real world, it's you got to go to the science museum to see where the things are done. And you work with those people, so. I get on this soapbox too much, but to be dumping $100 million and say, well, we've been doing it this way since the 90s, and, you know, we're doing better. And, oh, we got a great recycling rate here in the state office building. It's X amount of percent. Well, you ever think all we have is white paper here? All we have. We should have a 98% recycling rate in this building. I mean, to hang our hat that it's 80-some percent or whatever it is. We don't need to spend $100 million to guilt people into not putting it in the right can. So I look forward to the discussion in the future when we really do. It's absolutely embarrassing what we have going on. This is not that complicated, and I can't believe we spend tens of, now hundreds of millions of dollars to do something that's so simple to me. But
Mr. Chair, there is...
Well, I would appreciate it. If you have some great ideas, you've been here since... I remember since my first days when it was whatever that thing was called that you used to work for that we folded into this agency. You could remind me what that organization was.
Mr. Chair, that was the Office of Environmental Assistance.
Well, thank you. And if you got some great ideas, spill it right now. Save us. You know, if we could just save half of it, it'd be $50 million a year.
Mr. Chair, the rate that we recover materials is half of what we throw away. It's equal to that. So in this state, we have done a considerable effort on it. It does require resources to do that. When I sit with the neighboring states in Chicago on our Subtitle D meetings, their rates and their efforts are not nearly as good as ours. Now, that doesn't mean there's not room for improvement. And we've got, you know, how we get the counties connected to think about how to incorporate businesses and how to get the businesses connected to it. And then, like you mentioned, the state agency efforts. We have some outstanding examples from the state agencies, but we've got some more work to do there. So we're sharing those ideas. We're sharing them here, trying to get the equipment, the collection and all those things in place so it can get done.
Well, thank you, Mr. Banky, for what you do. I appreciate it. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I share some of your concerns, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your articulating those. In last year's legislation, we did try to take a crack at the, I think, what is some low-hanging fruit that we haven't captured or done a good enough job with, which is in the commercial sector. And my question is twofold. The first one is, how are you looking at implementing that commercial sector provision that we had in last year's legislation and enforcing that? And will the enforcement result in have any budgetary implications, either in terms of expenditures or income to the agency?
Mr. Banky.
Mr. Chair, members, the reference to the legislative changes that were made include businesses to provide recycling. And this is something that we've been looking at for a while, knowing that if we want to get to higher rates, we've got to make sure we include the businesses in the state as part of that. This is for the metropolitan area only. It's not for all greater Minnesota. There were concerns brought up over the testimony about difficulties in that. I think we'll see as we implement how the information and technology can be shared so people can do it easier. I think our strategy from an enforcement standpoint is first going to be to educate and get the businesses to understand what they need to do to comply. Our main objective is compliance. It's not necessarily penalties and enforcement. And then work with the businesses if they are having difficulties in how to set those things up. As I mentioned before, we've got a great system of public-private partnership. We've got committed waste haulers as well who are willing to help and provide that. The goals that have been set are really helping them show that, you know, it's not just their idea, it's a goal and statute that needs to be achieved. So the counties also are set with goals, and now businesses can help see those same goals, and how to achieve those will come through the technology and transformation that we go through with people learning about how to do systems. You mentioned gas stations, Mr. Chair, earlier. We've worked with gas stations to provide, through the Recycling Association of Minnesota, recycle-in-a-bottle programs where actual bottle-shaped receptacles have been placed and have increased things.
Director Banky, excuse me, don't even go there. Don't even go there. Excuse me, I hate interrupting people. I was told 4 years ago the bottle would be in Hastings at a couple gas stations. They were so proud to tell me last week or last month the bottle showed up. And I don't even know which shape it is, if it's a Pepsi shape or the Coke shape, so excuse me. No. Every gas station should be doing it. They should all be shaped the same size. And to be dumping $100 million and hang our hat on we got 14 gas stations somewhere doing it, I'm sorry. You know, as far as I'm concerned, pass a law that it's illegal to put the recycling in the garbage and have the recycling cops there to do something. No. I was promised that was coming and was going to really work and all that. I mean, why would a gas station have a garbage can without a recycling right next to it? And why not have the standard can that works? We dump $100 million into this, and it's not rocket science. It's not. My grandchild Elena can figure it out. Grandpa bring the chocolate milk bottle from Wendy's home with us because they don't recycle it here. No, it's... Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I don't know. I have a follow-up, which I think was similar to I think you were getting there, but I wanted to find out how you plan to report back in terms of are you monitoring the success of, you know, increasing rates in the business sector and how you can communicate with our committee about that? Because I think I share expectations that the chair does that, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get these rates up, and maybe through that mechanism, you know, we will, because I think it's something like half of the waste stream, at least, is generated, in these businesses. So I'm concerned also about the restaurants, too, and there's obviously food waste that can be composted that's thrown out into landfills, which is the last place it should go. But how do you intend to monitor and evaluate how this provision is being followed in the private sector?
Director Behnke.
Mr. Chair, members, measurement is a really important part of this, and we are putting in place a system to work with the haulers and work with the businesses directly to report that information. If it can't come directly from a hauler on the tonnages, then we'll work with the businesses. And some businesses, the larger businesses who do their own recycling, will be part of that collection of the data. Currently, we collect it from all 87 counties in the district annually and report that, and we'll continue to add to that to make sure that we're achieving and getting the increases that we need.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think there's many more questions as we move through the session that I'll have on this issue, and I appreciate your interest in it too, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Fisher.
Representative Hornstein kind of hit the questions I had.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess at the gas stations, we're going to need the paper recycling for the lottery, discarded lottery.
They're going to go to tickets. Single story to loft it in there.
But I did have a question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
Last week, the legislative auditor released a recycling report, which I would encourage the committee to be able to hear, because it talked about we have the hierarchy, and we've all been focusing on recycling here, but couple things in that report. One is that the numbers are variable in terms of how the percentages are achieved. So you can't manage what you can't measure. And how do we get consistency with the numbers? Secondly, it's reduce and reuse. And we don't have benchmarks for reduce and reuse. We focus on recycling here, but we haven't focused on reduction and reuse. And that report came out, and then just a couple days later, I was listening to something on the radio where there was, I think in Hennepin County, a fix-it store where you could bring in broken stuff and it would get fixed rather than throwing it away. And I thought that was a neat thing for folks to use. So, Mr. Chair, I would encourage hearing that, and maybe if we could get the people who do the fix-it stuff to come in and explain how they do that. It's not competing with another business, but how we can fix stuff rather than throwing it away and how that works. I think that'd be a neat thing to listen to.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And I do intend to hear the OLA's report on that recycling. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifiers, I'm also curious about state agencies. You'll recall we passed legislation last year with setting some new standards for state agencies. Will we also hear reports on that, or when, and what's that process look like?
Director Behnke.
Mr. Chair.
I don't blame you. Commissioner Kadalka, sorry.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we are starting up that process with the Department of Administration on it. We're taking a larger look at this. We're starting up a continuous improvement effort to see how we get the tools to each agency. Recycling is going to be within state agencies, is going to be multiple agencies having to play a role in it. Department of Admin with their expertise in contracting and other types of purchasing, MPCA and our work in education on recycling, but then also each of the agencies will have to have a continuous effort to move forward on it. So we're charting a new path forward and creating a way on how to move forward on state agency recycling. Some of the information is reported now through one of our interagency teams. However, we aren't getting full participation by all agencies. That's something we're looking to rebuild this sector within state government after the loss of the Resource Recovery Center at Department of Admin.
Thank you, Commissioner Kadalka. Did you have, okay, thank you. And Director Behnke, I apologize to you. I don't ever cut people off like that, but you happen to hit a chord, as you realize, and I don't mean to take my frustration out on you. You're a dedicated state employee who's done a great job. I've been a pleasure to work with you over all the years when I first carried bills for your previous agency. So thank you for what you do. You're the kind of dedicated state employee that we really are glad to have. What I would like to know is how much money has MPCA spent for instance, directly within your own agency to increase the rates? Because you have a really fantastic program in your building and the building DNR. I don't know if you call that two buildings or one building, but they're, I think, together with you and Bowser and DNR, you've done some really good things there, and I think it's unfortunate they're not duplicated, at least across the metro, more. What kind of amounts of money have you spent directly there?
Mr. Chair and members, the difficulties that you kind of alluded to, I think for a leased building like the space that the PCA and the DNR are in, really require connection with our landlord in order to make sure that we can do the improvements and spend the money the way we want. It's taken a whole host of folks to negotiate the contracts with them to make sure that we can have the improvements, to make sure that we can get the equipment that we need, the containers, the system, and then get it collected and taken to the right places. So we've worked a long time. We can get you the information on what it costs for us to do what we're doing so that others can compare it. But we use that to compare to other agencies when we're talking about what they can do and what their opportunities are. When you own the building and you own the space and you can control what happens in it, it's a little bit easier. But in leased space, it's definitely a connection that we need with our landlords. And for a lot of businesses, it's the same thing. You know, in a strip mall or in a series of businesses, they're going to have a landlord who's in control of the contracts for the collection of the materials, and working with them is where they have to start as well.
And Director Behnke, I think it's interesting you put it in that context, but let's also let people know we don't own the building you're in. That's actually a leased building. You've been able to work it out in a leased building with probably an independent contractor doing the trash pickup, maybe a different one doing the recycling pickup. We're in a building that the state of Minnesota built, owns. I'd imagine it's paid for by now. I hope it is. If you walk right out this room, the paper towels that are falling, well, some fall in the trash, some end up on the floor, they're not being composted today. And, you know, actually most of them fall out without even getting people to use. So we're in a building here where you would on paper think that we would be able to get this work out. So I look forward to working with the labor contracts and all the different agencies involved to move it forward. So thank you. But if you could give us some examples of specifically what you've done there, how much maybe all the different cans costed, how you reached the design there, is it similar to the one at the Science Museum? I am interested in that information. Members, we've got a couple more. I think Representative Fabian, and then, sorry, I was the one that was saying how we were going to stay on track and completely threw us off here. So, Director Behnke, you may need to stay there for a little while longer. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kadelka, on the Environmental Assistance Fund, I'm sure that there are literally hundreds of little separate programs within that fund. I don't know that, but, you know, if we were to get a breakdown on a spreadsheet of where the $96.5 million are spent, are there programs that you found within this fund that aren't working, that are not delivering the outcomes?
Commissioner Cadell.
Mr. Chair and committee members, that's part of our regular strategic and operational plan that we work on in the spring and fall, where we go back looking at, just like you mentioned there, the metrics on the outcomes for the environment in the spring and then the operational outcomes in the fall, to kind of tease apart which ones aren't doing as well or where we're not getting the biggest bang for our buck. In that case, that's one of the processes that we do that, and we make changes, and we do reassign. We'll talk about some of the continuous improvement efforts of programs that we, you know, haven't done as well. We've made some changes and have been able to reduce costs and put them in other areas.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, can you get us a list of the programs that you've actually eliminated?
Commissioner Cadell.
Mr. Chair, we can get back to the committee on that.
Thank you.
And
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then if you could also get for us the amount of money that you've saved by eliminating those programs, and then how you are then reappropriating that money within the fund.
You'll do that. Thank you. Commissioner Cadell, do you want to continue on with your presentation?
Sure. Mr. Chair and committee members, the next change item is restructuring fees. And this is really to work on the inconsistencies and inequalities that are built into the system depending on what permit you hold and what amount that you pay. An example of this is the air program and hazardous waste programs, where the funding for the programs, the core permitting programs, are covered largely by the permittees through fees and user fees. When we compare that to water and land programs, it's much less. So in air, where it's about 75% is covered through that, in the water and land programs, it's respectively 7% in water and 19% in land. So there's the difference there. If you are a business that holds just an air versus a water permit, you're paying a larger portion of the services you're asking for. It's also different between businesses within the same sectors. So in the case of a business that stores hazardous waste versus petroleum products, if you're storing hazardous waste, your permit fees nearly cover the program costs in its entirety, amongst the all those paying those hazardous waste fees. But if you're storing petroleum and underground tanks, there are no fees. So there are a number of inconsistencies in unequal treatment between various permittees. So businesses are on level playing ground in terms of what amount they pay for their fees to the agency. Another concern with this is that the sustainability of the current system. A number of members have talked last week about how the solid waste tax is what is funding and helping cover a number of non-land type programs. And then over the history, that was covered by general fund or federal funds, which portion of our budget, if you've seen in other slides, have gone way down. So an increasing reliance on the solid waste tax. But as we start to move up the solid waste recycling goals that we have, and because recyclables are not taxed with the solid waste tax, that revenue will be going down and creating a system where that funding source is not able to cover the long-term pieces. So what we're looking to do in this proposal is to start a discussion on how to restructure our fees. Currently, the AIR program is set up so that the legislature and governor set an appropriation about how many dollars are needed to be collected through the fee programs. That amount is set by the legislature and governor in the budget bills. Then there's a formula behind it based on the tons of pollutants emitted, which is calculated to determine what each individual permittee charges. The system is set up so that the legislature and the governor set the exact amount that needs to be collected through fees, not more, not less. If we compare this to how water is done currently, water is done at a flat fee. Say if a permit is $500 annual, the amount coming into the environmental fund is different depending on how many people may apply for that permit at that year. So some years it may be more, some years it may be less, creating a difference there where the amount coming in doesn't match what may be what's needed to run the program, too high or too low. So what the proposal does, and we've got in the handout a little bit of a graph to kind of illustrate the process, is that we would like to set up the water and the land fees the same way, where the governor and the legislature jointly set the appropriation level needed for the program, and then have a formula that then disperses that amongst the permittees. But to be able to get there, we need to develop that permit formula through the rulemaking process. And before doing that, we would like to rearrange statutes to make sure this system is one that will work. In that process, over the next few years, we would be working with stakeholders from various groups, the permittees, outside groups, and others to determine how the permit structure should be set up along that avenue. As a result, there's not a change item, any dollar amounts in the current budget, but the start of a process of moving forward to a new way for fees to be determined.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know if this is the right place to ask this question, but it seems like it might be part of the right place, Mr. Chairman. What I wanted to ask you is, in looking at these fees, what about the impact of these areas on the community, on the public health, for example? So you're talking about volume of pollutants or volume of at least I heard you say volume. What about impact, and particularly the issue of health impact? So when you're talking about air pollution, for example, as compared to pollution from some other source, it seems to me like there might be some different criteria. And I noticed, you know, earlier in this document, you also have the thresholds tightening for our understanding of how some of these pollutants affect the community. So is that part of what you're putting into this fee structure, or and are some of the stakeholders that are most impacted by those inequities part of this? So I don't know if you understand my question. I'm just wondering what role those different mediums play in terms of the impact on the community and public health.
And then, Representative Clark, are you asking them then if they potentially would scale the fee? So in other words, if it had a more significant impact, do they pay more? Would the fee be potentially more? Representative Clark.
That's definitely the corollary. Thank you. Well.
Commissioner Cadell.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we have not started the stakeholder process, so we will invite groups from all ranges to be a part of that. And that's what the discussion we want to have with folks. How do we want to set it up? We could do it by environmental risk, what you're talking about. We could do it by the amount of effort, a point system on time spent on permits. There's a number of different ways to structure this. But we'd like, before deciding on one specific way to do it, we'd like to have a discussion with others to determine which way is best. Depending on which formula we go with, there are other implications on what that would look like in terms of businesses and that. Those are all discussions, I think, and the information we'd like to be able to move forward on. But for this formula system to work, the overall structure needs to be there, and that's what we're requesting in the budget change, is that we move from a structure of an individual fee set and rules by the agency to one where the total appropriation amount set by the governor and the legislature on the amount to be collected.
Follow-up, Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just be interested to see what kind of stakeholders are identified and how that fits in. And it sounds like, you know, maybe you could have a combination of fee arrangements, maybe not just a single way.
Well, Representative Clark, I think the agency's proposal is for us and the governor, as Commissioner Kudelka said, we would set a level of money that they would a structure anyway, and then they would have the flexibility to go and charge fees to whoever and whatever and at whatever level they deem is appropriate for the different situations. So I think their request is to give them a lot more flexibility than they currently have to decide who pays the fees and how much. We would set a cap or a reduction or whatever it is from current situation, but they would have much more flexibility as an agency to deal with it. Is this kind of the gist of it, Commissioner Cadell?
Mr. Chair and committee members, correct. The legislature in that would set the total amount of fees to be collected, and then the formula would be worked through the rulemaking process.
Thank you. If you want to continue on to the next one. I think you, Commissioner, you have maybe three more change items and then also the compensation one, which should be relatively straightforward, so I think we're doing pretty good time-wise.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the next one is the Toxic Free Kids Act and dealing with data on products sold to children. We're increasingly finding contaminants of concern in our bodies in the Minnesota environment, including toxic metals, endocrinic active chemicals, and others. And we're learning more and more about the role that these play in people's health, whether it's cancer, developmental or reproduction problems, or behavioral learning disorders. And so many Minnesotans are interested in knowing what is in the products that they purchase. However, that's unknown. You may look at a label on a can of soup, know what's in there, know if you're allergic to salt or sugar or your health restrictions don't allow for that. If you look at a child's toy, you don't have that information. So what this information is about isn't a regulatory system, but rather an informational system to provide more data to families and purchasers to let them make the decision on how they'd like to move forward. This would be set up by creating a reporting system in partnership with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, Department of Commerce, and Department of Health, where the 9 priority chemicals that are listed that include things like lead, cadmium, flame retardants, and others, companies would report on a reporting schedule to the agency what is in their products. If there is not one of these 9 priority chemicals in their products, they wouldn't report it. The system is set up so that over time the information would be known to the actual UPC code, so you would be able to tell what individual item in a product line. For instance, some programs have it based on the block level, which is So you know a company, say Disney, you know their PJs may have one of these flame retardants that you have questions about are in their item, but you're, when you're in the store, you don't know if that's the PJs with the car puppy thing on their PJs or the princess glitter crown. That's going to make a difference to a purchaser. They need to know that information and not unduly cast a concern on all of the lines of the manufacturer's products. With that more detailed information, the purchaser can make decisions, and it also makes sure that manufacturers are not put into a bucket, and if they are free of these chemicals, are not deemed in some other way to have them there. There are four FTEs in this proposal, two of them with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to create that reporting system, and one at the Department of Commerce and Department of Health that would help with education and outreach to provide this information to consumers as they move forward. In addition, any dollars that are collected through the fee system, there's a $1,000 fee associated with the reporting of these chemicals on each product, would go towards running the program long term, but also any additional dollars would go to grants to help find safer alternatives. The budget request here is just for the first 2 years to help set up this proposal through the general fund. In future bienniums, this funding would come through the fee process of the program and would be able to cover its own costs.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How's the fee structure, Mr. Kadelka, Commissioner Kadelka, how's the fee structure going to be developed?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, in the language of the statute itself, it's going to be a $1,000 fee for each product category or priority chemical combination that's reported. That's going to be fully outlined in the statute. There will be no changes from that.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, who's going to pay the fee?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, it would be the company that reports that the one of the priority chemicals is in its product.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious to know if the program also includes food. You know, Chair McNamara talked about the chocolate milk containers from Wendy's. I happen to really enjoy the French fries from McDonald's. Can you help us out there?
Mr. Chair,
Commissioner Kadelka,
food and beverage packaging is included in the proposal that would be reported on.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you define packaging for me, please? I mean, how extensive is food going to be? Does it include restaurants?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, it would be for those that are marketing just towards children. So if it's something to a larger audience, for instance, if it's Campbell's tomato soup, a wide-based market that would not fall under this program. This is for manufacturing distributors that are targeting and selling children's products. If there was a food that was specifically for children, one of the things when my daughters were younger that we purchased were these little puffs in a plastic container. It would be, are those containers including these one of these nine priority chemicals?
Commissioner Kadelka, so the kids' meals at the fast food restaurants would be included?
Mr. Chair and committee members, we could look at it a little further on how the definition's written, but the would be the packaging if it's directly to kids.
Thank you. Additional follow-up.
Thank you, Mr.
Fabian.
Chair. Commissioner Kadelka, then who determines, who are the police that determine who the products are marketed to?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, that would be through the agencies working on enforcing and making sure that there's compliance with the reporting structure.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then what would be the penalty for not complying?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, in the program itself allows for the agency to do the testing if a company is not doing it itself and recuperate those costs through the company. Otherwise, non-reporting would be up to the enforcement discretion of the agencies like any other issue.
Additional follow-up, Representative Fabian? No. Okay, Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kadelka, you talk about the nine priority chemicals in this proposal. What are the de minimis levels for some of these chemicals
Lead, of course, is a very bad chemical. There's no question about that, but it is also the most naturally occurring element in the world. And you can test down to parts per billions now. What are the de minimis levels? Are you going to allow background chemical composition in these products?
Commissioner Kadalka or Ms. Lothhammer is coming down if you want to just defer. Welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record, good to see you again. And if you heard Representative Uglum's questions, just go ahead and answer it.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Shannon Lothhammer. I'm the Director of the Environmental Analysis and Outcomes Division. And Mr. Chair and members, there wouldn't be a de minimis level of reporting. Basically, any chemical that was added or that was present as a contaminant would need to be, a contaminant above 100 micrograms per liter would need to be reported. Anything that was added to the product would need to be reported in categories. And I don't have the category ranges in front of me, but basically the manufacturer distributor wouldn't need to say a specific amount, but for example, if there was between 100 and 500 parts per million or milligrams per liter of a particular chemical, or between 500 and 1,000, so they need to report in those ranges.
Representative Uglum.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So what you're saying is, in this case, 500 parts per million or less would be exempt.
Ms. Lothhammer.
Mr. Chair and members, no, actually, I'm sorry for the confusion. Anything that could be measured, so above the what's called the practical quantification level, which is the minimum amount that can be measured in the lab, and that's established based on what is a standard method for analysis, anything above that would need to be reported in those categories. So the precise number wouldn't need to be reported, but if it was in that range, then it would need to be reported which range that chemical falls into.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What are the 9 chemicals, please?
Do you want to answer those now, or do you just want to get those to us? Do you want those right now, Representative Uglum, if they have them?
Mr. Chair, my reasoning behind it is there are many, many chemicals that occur in manufacturing processes and things like that. Some of them may be relatively common, but they could be toxic at certain levels. We've all heard of material safety data sheets and the amounts that are shown on material safety data sheets and the levels. And I know that Representative Pearsall has studied some of this too. But the you know, some things are not toxic at certain levels. And now what you're looking at here is everything's going to be toxic.
Ms. Lothhammer, why don't you read us the 9?
Mr. Chair and members, the 9 chemicals are bisphenol A, cadmium, decabromodiphenyl ether, formaldehyde, lead, hexabromocyclododecane, and then 3 different types of phthalates, which are plasticizers.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would submit to you that I think that business and commerce are going to have some major problems with this particular way that this is structured. One other follow-up question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Uglum.
Question about why the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is involved with this. Why isn't it just a Department of Health and Commerce initiative? Why do you have to be involved and add FTEs to the program?
Commissioner Kadalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is one of the recommendations of a joint report through the Department of Health and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency on this area. Prior to this proposal, there is language in law that sets the priority chemicals that the Department of Health would be the lead on, and that is in consultation with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. So the question is why certain duties are at agencies. Right now, other states have similar setups, and it is the comparable to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency that does the data collection and reporting mechanism part of it, and then other agencies that do the information and outreach. For instance, Department of Health will be a part of this, so one of the FTEs will be working with them to help with education on what those priority chemicals are, provide the data to consumers so that they can make choices. The same is with the Department of Commerce to help with that outreach to provide information to others. So as each agency, we're working to our strengths and not necessarily creating new parts of each agency, which is not what they're not used to.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one final comment. If you're looking at some of these plasticizers that are used in the production of plastic cups or whatever and everything else as this, unless you're eating them, I guess it's probably not going to be toxic. I think there's going to be some major industry blowback on this. Thank you.
Representative Clark, to this point.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to point out one of the things that I learned about some of the plasticizers, the way they get into our body. You microwave something in the oven that's in plastic instead of in glass. You're incorporating some of that into your food. There's many other ways. If you buy a can of soup that has a certain kind of coating in it, it's going into the food that's in there, depending on the pH. So there's numerous ways that we expose ourselves to these elements, and I just wanted to point that out, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark, my wife hates that when I do that. She says she won't do it with hers, so she won't let she. Whenever I do it in the plastic, she said, "Don't you dare do that." Representative Purcell, you're next.
Let's take care of you.
Yeah, she's watching out for me. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the discussion. I could tell I was looking at you over there, Representative Uglum, when you were talking. The problem here is that the Toxic Subcontrol Act at the federal level, the feds have been sitting on their thumbs, and we know something. We've screened a quarter of the 80,000 chemicals used in commerce, 25% we've even screened, and so we know very little about them, and now states are playing catch-up. What we do know is that a lot of these, as we've learned with mercury and lead, et cetera, it's the kids we're looking out after here. So, you know, if you don't like these regulatory aspects, then go look your kids and grandkids in the eye and say, I don't give a care about you, because this is what it's about. And the kids we're talking about that are most susceptible and sensitive are the ones inside their mom. And what's the mom eating? That stuff that goes through right through to the child inside. So this is pretty serious stuff, and I have been working in this area for a number of decades, but we're behind the eight ball. And I was these nine. Do we have a list of priority chemicals? I would ask the testifiers that we're working on, and we got these nine, and then in 4 or 5 years we're gonna bring on another six or eight, or we're gonna look at them. Do we have a list like that,
Ms. Lothammer?
Mr. Chair and members, that's the responsibility of the Minnesota Department of Health to create the original list of the nine priority chemicals, and then to look at that ongoing in the future as well.
Representative Purcell.
I that's fine. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for those comments. Representative Fabian, is it to this point?
No.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is, I want to understand how consumers will know. It's not clear to me how, if I'm purchasing a product for a child, that I would know that one of these products were in it.
Commissioner Kadalka?
Mr. Chair and committee members, that's the outreach portion the two FTEs for the Department of Commerce and Health to work on, is helping with that outreach. So there's different pieces which could be ranging anywhere from information on our website, or providing it. A lot of third parties, health care organizations, will help provide this information to others, whether it's in the medical community or other parties. If you go online today, there have been third parties that have created apps using data from other sources to be able to run your barcode of the product you're about to buy to find that. There's, as technology increases, those are some of the things that we'll explore on how to best handle that. But it'll be more than just the agencies with the outreach. There'll be other consumer protection folks that are using the data, too.
Follow-up, Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you. It seems to me most consumers look at a label. And is there any consideration of looking at a label? Wouldn't it be easier for the consumer to know the information if it were on sort of some kind of a label?
Commissioner Kadalka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this proposal doesn't have labeling in it.
Representative Johnson, he's done. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To either of you that might be able to address this question, more of a clarification maybe, so I am on the right page. I'm thinking of a lot of the small businesses in the my district, Brainerd Lakes area, where you'd have flea markets, where you'd have different shops throughout the area. where a lot of that product is being created locally. How is that going to impact, say, a wooden toy that might be painted or varnished or something from a small operator?
Ms. Lothhammer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The requirements for reporting only kick in for manufacturers and distributors over $100,000 in revenue or over 3,000 units in sales. So it would be the larger manufacturers and distributors not looking to have kind of that crafting industry have that reporting requirement.
Ms. Lothhammer, so if you're a log furniture place up north and you make 3,000 pieces of furniture, you would fall, 1,000 pieces of furniture, you would fall under this?
Mr. Chair, no. Only if you made more than 3,000 pieces or units that is a children's product, would you then fall into the reporting requirements?
It needs to be a children's product again. Thank you. Representative Heinzman, any additional follow-up? Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kadelka, in the past 2 years, this has been before the legislature and maybe even before that. How is this proposal different from the proposal that came forward in the previous 2 years?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, you're correct. It's very similar. There are some changes where we've tried to streamline the reporting pieces of it to make it function more smoother for businesses. But in large part, the concepts and the philosophy behind it is the same.
Thank you.
Representative Uglin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so you're looking at both distributors and manufacturers having to report. If you're a distributor and making your 3,000 pieces of log furniture, they're going to have to report. If you're a manufacturer making the varnish or whatever, or even the nails that go into these things, or screws or whatever, they're going to have to report. Now, my question to you is, you know, we have a rather robust U.S. economy and an international economy. How are you going to capture everybody from out state and out of the country into this program while you're forcing our Minnesota manufacturers and distributors to do this? How are you going to capture the Chinese, the West Coast, East Coast distribution and importation into this state? How are you going to do that?
Ms. Lothhammer or Commissioner Kadelka, if you want to kind of wrap up Representative Uglum's answer into the broader context, and then yep. We're going to move on.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Minnesota will not be the first state to do this. Washington State has already led on this and put in some of these reporting requirements. The agency's proposal does go a little further, but they've already develop a system that we have built ours off of too, to be able to capture those reporting beyond the borders of a state. There's also a number of state agencies that work together in cooperation to share information. So those are the tools that we'll be using to make sure that other businesses have done that. And in Washington, other businesses outside the state of Washington, the large businesses, whether they're from international companies or others in the U.S., have reported the data. We anticipate, just like other permittees through the program, companies want to comply. They want to do the right thing. And so we don't find that it's going to be any different than other programs in the agency.
Thank you. You want to continue on with your presentation?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the next one is creating a central rulemaking tool. This is one that actually has a direct appropriation or to the revisor's office eventually. The MPCA is the lead agency for rulemaking amongst agencies, and we've turned in the paperwork on this, and so it's in our budget bill, but my understanding there's work to move this into the state government finance area. If you'd like, I can elaborate on it here or save time and just...
Sounds like it's not going to be our deal, so why don't you just roll?
Mr. Chair, the next item is for the Environmental Quality Board. EQB is a housed within the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's building, and we help with some of their IT and other responsibilities. This proposal is to help with environmental review efficiency. It's really about improving the system in two ways. One is by providing additional information to folks by creating a searchable database to make environmental review documents accessible to citizens and to other parties, including responsible government units that must put these together. And a couple examples include, a lot of times, environmental review is done by the local unit of government. If they have a project that comes into their area that they're the responsible government unit to do, they oftentimes are recreating the wheel. By having these documents online, they can look and see if two counties to the north or south of them have done a similar thing and start with that model and not have to start from scratch. The same goes about with a business. If a business similar type is done in other ways, they can use the information in the other environmental review documents to get a head start, and this will help save them time in the process by providing that information to everyone. The second piece deals with rulemaking. The EQB is the agency that oversees the environmental review standards, and as a part of a legislative report a couple years ago, there was a required report every 5 years by agencies and others, responsible government units for environmental review, which is the agency or the local unit of government that oversees the environmental review, to report on potential changes to environmental review, to the rulemaking, things that may not any longer need to be environmental review or change the mandatory thresholds. An example is the MPCA proposed that the threshold for environmental review for landfills needs reconsideration given the confusion. This proposal adds one staff to be able to go through that rulemaking by working with other agencies to update environmental review where needed. So the overall amount here you see in terms of the general fund dollars, it is for two FTEs, one for the environmental rulemaking, and one for the environmental review database. And you see in fiscal year 6, a larger sum of dollars for the first year for the upfront cost to build that electronic system to make data more available to folks.
Commissioner Kudelka, I'm going to ask you to walk through the rest of it, and then we're going to come back here, and I think we'll probably bring the director down once he's sat through the last couple of days. He can come down, too, if you don't mind. So why don't you walk through the rest of your proposal so we're done with it, and then we'll go back to EQB.
Mr. Chair and members, the last piece of our budget's structure is administrative support. And as you can see, this is funded through an internal fund in the special revenue fund. Primarily how this is structured is similar to what you've seen and heard in other agencies, is that we receive no direct appropriations to this budget program from any of the funds, whether general, environmental remediation, or what have you, but rather this is funded through an internal assessment that funds our support services. Some of the activities that are funded through this part of our budget include the commissioner's office, our legislative coordination, human resources, financial management, communications, legal services, and our continuous improvement unit. The last change item that we're bringing to you for discussion is our compensation or operating increase. This is, again, something similar that you've heard from other state agencies. It should be consistent across the state agencies. For us, what this does is it hits the compensation, or it affects the compensation that is funded through our main sources of funding, general, environmental remediation, and the petroleum fund. As you've heard previously, the amount of the increase was calculated based on a 1.8% increase of staffing costs. This was a guidance that was issued to state agencies from MMB, and this is the way that we calculated our increase.
Mr. Mueller, if I can just clarify, it's 1.8% of the staffing costs, not 1.8% of the total MPCA budget.
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct.
Thank you. Is that finished, Commissioner Kudelka, or do you have a little bit more?
Mr. Chair and committee members, just one more quick thing. We are in the process of providing the committee with a number of packets of information on the questions from the last week, including the last packet was one of our continuous improvement projects. And our administrative services, this was something that received a lot of questions, and we just want to highlight some of the work that we do as part of our continuous improvement symposium that we're have held for the third year. We put together poster presentations for this for the board and also the rest of the agency because we believe in a culture of continuous improvement. If you go up and down our elevator, each different stop has a different poster that goes around to help make folks aware of the benefits of continuous improvement and also incorporate it into their daily work. The poster here is an example of how we reduce the time and payments for checks to be posted. You can see there's a cost savings of over $100,000 per year, and per unit costs drop down. This is the type of tools that we've been able to use at the agency, not only in terms of the operational costs of the agency, but we have other examples that are included in the last packet to the committee that includes things such as improving the chemical additive review process, which is providing more certainty for businesses and increasing the turnaround on them getting answers to their permit questions. These are some of the small changes that we're making throughout the agency to help with time, costs, and improve the quality of service.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you for mentioning that. Director, do you want to come down also? Thank you. Representative Neuberger, I think you were on the slot next for a question. I'm assuming it was at the time of EQB. If you want to give your question, that'd be good. Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just two quick questions. How many members are on the EQB at this time?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Will Seufert.
Director.
Mr. Chairman, Will Seufert, Executive Director, Environmental Quality Board. Thank you for the opportunity to be before you today.
Welcome, Director. If you could answer the question.
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, members, there are 9 state agency commissioners on the board and 5 citizen members. The chairman currently is the agriculture chairman or agriculture commissioner, Dave Fredrickson.
Director, do you serve on the board then as the director? Are you a member of that?
Mr. Chairman, I am not. I'm staff.
Okay.
But I don't have a vote on the board.
Yep. Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there's 9 total members and 5 citizen members, so there's 14. Or there's 9 members and 5 are citizen and there are 4 commissioners?
There are 14. There are 14 total voting members. 9 of them are state agency commissioners.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you. How many of the citizen members are from Greater Minnesota?
Director Seifert.
2 of the 5 are from Greater Minnesota.
Representative Neuberger.
Okay, and then final, just the final question. Does the EQB, do your duties ever overlap with the DNR? Are there times where you seem to be overlapping? We had the DNR down here recently, and they do a lot of environmental work, which I applaud them for. But I was just curious, where does the EQB stop and the DNR start?
Mm-hmm. Director, I'm confusing myself. Seifert or Seifert? Sorry.
It's actually Seifert. But thank you for asking, Mr. Chairman.
It actually has a U in it?
It does, yeah.
Excuse me. Director Seifert.
Not a problem. Mr. Chairman and Representative, the board's principal responsibility is the oversight of the environmental review program. So in doing that, we provide technical assistance to government agencies and local government units that do environmental review. And we also have authority over the Environmental Review Chapter of Minnesota Administrative Rules, but we don't do the environmental review. So the MPCA, for instance, and the DNR have environmental review units. They do environmental review for certain categories of projects that our rules assign them as the RGU. But the Environmental Quality Board does not do environmental review with some minor exception.
Okay. Representative Uglum. Oh, that was good. Thank you. Director Seufert, would you like to add anything more? You got a couple of minutes here. I got a feeling there's going to be some discussion about your division more ongoing, so I don't know if you want to give us the good reasons of why your division has grown so much in the last couple of years and what good stuff you're doing with that growth.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to talk for a couple minutes about how wonderful the Environmental Quality Board is. We, as I mentioned earlier, the principal responsibility of the Environmental Quality Board is oversight of the Environmental Review Program. We're here before you today because we want to try, the board's been really looking at ways to try and make this more efficient, and we've identified two ways that we think would actually drive some efficiencies into environmental review more broadly. And one is a technology investment that really is trying to, when the board was moved in 2011 from the Department of Agriculture to the MPCA, so were boxes full with about 20,000 files. We're trying to make those accessible real-time for project proposers, citizens, local government units that want to have real-time access to environmental review documents dating back to the early 70s when the EQB was created. We're also trying to update our program rules. The last revisions were made in 2007. What we're trying to accomplish here is to clarify definitions, to update mandatory categories, so that projects that have evolved that we understand might not have an environmental impact, might need some clarification, we can do the rulemaking to actually make the program more up-to-date. That's why we're here before you. I think more broadly to your question, Mr. Chairman, in recent years, our budget has grown to deal with the growing silica sand mining industry. Specifically, we had an appropriation of $500,000 to provide technical assistance to do model standards and to do environmental review rulemaking, update our thresholds for silica sand projects. And so that's probably what you're referring to. But I'll stop there.
Well, thank you for coming and for attending the last couple of days. Commissioner Kudelka, any final comments, thoughts?
Mr. Chair and committee members, we appreciate the opportunity to present the budget. If there are questions after this meeting, please feel free to get hold of myself or the rest of the legislative team, and we'll be happy to provide you with any information you need.
And Commissioner Kudelka, I want to thank specifically Ms. Gauthier for getting us information in a real timely fashion and good information. It was good to see over the weekend some additional information, so thank you for that. I've got Representative Hausman, then Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding, it's been a while since I've looked at the legislative charge. That was quite a beautiful statement, but the idea is protecting our air, land, and water, keeping it clean and healthy, can't be the responsibility of any agency because there are so many overlapping responsibilities, and that the best way is working together, and that's the purpose of an organization such as yours, bringing them all together across those boundaries, knowing that we protect our air, land, and water, keeping it healthy, better if we work together and not at cross purposes.
Director Seifert.
That is correct, and Representative, that's best embodied through our environmental review program, but we also, we are a coordinating body, and so there are a number of projects. I referenced silica sand where they're multi-jurisdictional, multi-dimensional. We try to provide that leadership and coordination on those issues and engage the public in those discussions.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to compliment the EQB on the initiative to make documents accessible statewide. Just real quickly, when I arrived here 2 years ago in mid-session, I was faced with the silica sand issue, which faced my district significantly. I quickly learned that Le Sueur County really had a lot of history working with silica sand and had developed a lot of expertise. I'm hopeful that the county documents can be involved in that too, because it seemed to me immediately that the other counties facing similar challenges could learn a lot from Le Sueur County.
Thank you. Any additional comments? Excuse me, Director, did you have a comment?
I was just going to confirm, yes, Representative, all county environmental review documents, EAWs, EISs, and AUARs will be included in this.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, this is just a question about jurisdiction I've had for a while, and maybe the EQB has something to do with this, or maybe it's the PCA. Who is responsible for the overview of the wastewater sludge situation that we have where that is being exported to our agricultural lands from the metropolitan area? Which agency, or is it a combination of them that are working on this?
Commissioner Kudelka?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the answer to that question is the MPCA has regulations that deal with the application of wastewater sludge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Clark. I see the big blue truck leave Hastings periodically, but I guess I didn't know who was controlling it. It's got Met Council on the side. Members, we're done. Thank you, Commissioner Kudalka, Director Swyford, for coming down. Tomorrow we have the Minnesota Zoo and the Clean Water Council Rex. Members, we're going to discuss the zoo's budget for the next 2 years. We will not be having a discussion about the zoo and its current deficiency bill. So I want to center on going forward. And it won't be a discussion about any of the ongoing things dealing with the deficiency bill. So thank you, members. We're adjourned.